Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. It was a night of cameos last night on RTE television. Yeah. Joanna Reardon. I don't know if you spotted her on Fair City, but she had a part just as an extra in the background. And she tweeted, say, "I've never been so nervous, excited in my whole life. Thanks, RTE Fair City, for letting us set records, crash and have fun. My agent will be in touch about future roles." That's Joanna Reardon. That's great. She must have done it when she was up covering the Paralympics for RTE. That's good. And then seemingly I was on Kin last night. I didn't even know I was on Kin. That's mad, isn't it? Somebody was watching me on the telly and something happened and they couldn't tell me what exactly happened or in what context it was because they didn't want to give away the plot because I haven't watched it yet. So that'll be odd watching that. How are you on this Monday afternoon? 51551 ray@rte.ie. As I said, we had Margaret Leahy on Friday. And Margaret is approaching 61. Yeah. And we had her on with Catherine during the summer when she told the story about having 5 clocks in the kitchen. 4 of the clocks were set to the time zones in which her children are, around the world, Australia, Ontario, New York, wherever they were. And then the final clock obviously is on local time. And she mentioned at the time that she was a widow and a bit about loneliness. Anyway, we had her back on Friday and we spoke to her at length about her situation and travelling alone. That was the big thing, travelling alone. And I got a huge reaction. Bernie has been on, says, "I heard a little clip from today's show, the widow who travels and other widows who texted in. I am also a widow who'd be interested in a widow community travel group. Is there such an initiative? Do you have any contact details, please?" See, this just happened organically, speaking to Margaret, that maybe a group would be a good thing to do. Like-minded people with similar challenges could get together and maybe go away together if that's what they wanted. Now, so there's nothing in place as yet. Anne was on as well. She says, "Heard some of the above segment while I was driving this afternoon. I listened with interest. And what struck me when I heard some of the comments to the show was that there are many single women in Ireland, single through being widowed or through divorce and separation. Personally, I'm single through marriage breakup and my babies have all flown the nest and I'm home alone with my lovely little dog, Coco. My daughter thought a dog would be good company for me. My life is full with work, hobbies, friends, etc. But I miss being part of a couple, 14 years now. I recently visited my son who lives abroad and has a partner. They're very happy together and that fills me with joy." Now, Ray, I finally get to the point. If there was interest, it would be nice to set up a group of like-minded women who could meet for support and friendship and have fun. Perhaps you have names of other women in the same boat. I'd be very interested in meeting up. It looks like there's something happening here. There's a bit of momentum, isn't there? I would love to connect with that lady you had on Friday about travelling with a friend. I'm a trusted pet sitter and I travel to various destinations to mind pets in owners' homes, but I also want to take trips abroad with a companion. I'm a keen gardener, walk, dance, read and full of joys of life. I think her name was Margaret. You had her on your show previously. I'm retired, age 68. I'd like you to give her my email." So there's a lot of interest there. And Mary says, "Really enjoyed your interview with Margaret on Friday. She has such a great attitude to life and in a funny way to death. My husband works away a lot, so I too travel solo sometimes, but I have him to tell it to after." And that was the thing that Margaret was saying, if you didn't hear, was that you go for a cup of coffee and that's the end of it. Whereas if you have somebody at home, you have a cup of coffee with your friend and then you go home and you have the chat about having the cup of coffee and the chat that was had, you see, yes. I'd never thought of it like that before. So when something happens, that's the end of it. Anyway, Mary goes on to say, "Can I ask that you have her on again, maybe after the opera?" Margaret said she was going to the Wexford Opera Festival, didn't she? Yeah. "I've never been to one and would think it is intimidating, so would like to know how she got on." And Joseph was on as well about Margaret. The last one I'll read. "I enjoyed the woman who was processing travelling single on Friday. Stirred up a lot of feelings. Can we be sufficient as single people? Sure we can. Even people in marriages and committed relationships can be lonely. They might be physically together under the same roof, but miles apart emotionally," says Joseph. Not everyone is going to be lucky enough to meet a soulmate. Does such a thing exist, Joseph? Women can find it harder, as many men are emotionally retarded. It's a sweeping generalisation, Joseph. And women have done some work on themselves. Another sleeping generalisation. It doesn't happen in a bar or on a football field. Single people need not feel jealous of people who are in relationships. This may be just an external impression. In reality, they could be just tolerating each other. Mindfulness and spiritual exercises will help single people dig deeper into their own inner resources and see being single more as a liberation than a deficit. This issue is a huge issue, human loneliness, but this is not depression. Yeah, and any type of loneliness is sad. But when you're lonely within a relationship, that strikes me as being even sadder. Because as Joseph says, the external impression might be one thing, but the reality might be something completely different. Anyway, loads of thoughtful emails there, and it looks like something's going to happen here. We'll be back on to Margaret, see if there's, you know, the appetite for a group, and see where it goes from there. So we will definitely be talking to Margaret Leahy of Leahy Travel. No, she's not. She's not Leahy Travel yet. In the future. I was out for a run yesterday morning, and I was running past a family. I think they were coming back from camogie or hockey or something like that. And there were two young girls. I'd say they were around 8 or 9. They had a couple of dogs, and then there was a couple of mothers. And as I ran past, anyway, one of the little girls shouted out, "Do dogs have minds?" And nobody responded. And she said it again, "Do dogs have minds?" Which I thought was a brilliant question. Do dogs have minds? So I didn't know the answer. And maybe she meant, do dogs have brains? In which case, yes, is the answer. But do they have minds as we understand minds? So I went home and I Googled, and Niamh Googled today, and we came up with this guy who seems to be the expert. Gregory Burns is his name, and he's written a book called What It Is Like to Be a Dog. He's a fascinating character from the States. We may speak to him before the end of the week. I'm just reading an article he wrote for the New York Times. He trained his dog Callie to go into an MRI. You see, if you've been in an MRI, you'll know that you have to stay still, and they're noisy yokes. They're very noisy yokes, very uncomfortable. And normally, if they were doing research with animals, they would have had to sedate them to put them in an MRI. The problem with that, of course, is that they're not conscious. So the brain activity is different to if they were awake. So what Gregory did with Callie, his dog, was trained him to go into an MRI. He built a sort of a simulation of an MRI at home, trained Callie to go in and stay quiet and stay still, and the noise is there and all. And then eventually he was able to bring him into a real MRI for 30 seconds. And that's when he found that the activity in a dog's brain in reaction to seeing somebody they know or hand signals, whatever, is very similar to the activity in a human brain. So he concluded, the ability to experience positive emotions like love and attachment would mean that dogs have a level of sentience comparable to that of a human child. And this ability suggests a rethinking of how we treat dogs. So, the answer to the 8-year-old, do dogs have minds? According to Gregory Burns, yes. Of course, that begs the question, do they have a sense of self? Do they know where they are in the world like we do? We know we have a sense of self, don't we? Like you're John O'Brien or Mary Murphy or Sophie Murphy, wherever. And you know where you are in the world. You know sort of what sort of person you are. A lot of that is from feedback from other humans. We've higher thought, of course. We can look into the future. We can remember the past. Can dogs do that? Like, I know they have personalities because our two dogs at home, like one of them is like a cat and the other is like a sort of a bold 7-year-old. He has a relationship with Jenny that's sort of emotional, and then his relationship with me is like two lads, you know, two lads. He'll come over and he'll sit at my feet. There won't be much petting or anything like that, but he knows he can come over and sit at my foot, and he likes the fact that he can feel it. So he has a different relationship with me than he does with Jenny. But I think it's fascinating. And Gregory, if we get him on before the end of the week, we'll change your mind about how you treat your dog and how we all treat our dogs. Anyway, we look forward to talking to him before the end of the week. 5 on 551 Ray at RTE.ie. We better tell you about our quiz of today. Yes. Today is the 11th of the 10th, the 11th of October 2021. We have 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years, decades, centuries, and we're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each and win a prize. Yes. You can win a relaxing 2-night stay for 2 people at the Kingsley Hotel in Cork. Beautiful bedrooms, bistro-style restaurant, luxury spa, and an extensive health club. It's set in a stylish and distinctive riverside location on the banks of the River Lee, a great base to explore Cork City and County. You can go to Blarney Castle, Rumley's Open Farm, go to Kinsale, Crosshaven, loads of things to do, loads of things to do. So it's a 2-night break in the Kingsley, thekingsley.ie for more information. If you want to be on, answer 5 questions, maybe win the prize. You have to answer our qualifying question first. And this is it. To be able to chance, here's our qualifying question. Who is the current Minister for Finance? Busy man today and tomorrow and the day after. Who's the current Minister for Finance? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. Thank you. Now, Mary, I too am alone. I would love to join this group. Can you give my email to this lady? It's easy to tell someone that you're sick, but difficult to tell someone that you are lonely. I listened with expectation to you speaking to people about people being lonely and forming a group to meet up to travel. I'd love to set up a group to get together with women like Margaret. Can you please help? That's another Mary. And a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. Germaine Greer, the female eunuch. Girls, ladies, you don't need a bloke to complete you. Think separation, divorce, widowhood. I've been single by choice for 10 years. Freedom, no encumbrances. No one to be entertained, amused, funded, managed, put up with. Maybe it's a generational thing. I'm 58. Never, ever will enter into a relationship. Blokes want sex. That's the top and bottom of it. No thanks, lads. It's the single, hassle-free, uncomplicated and financially independent life for me. Come on, girls. Embrace your unilateral independence. Well, that suits you. Not for everybody. And that's what makes the world go round. We're all different. And our needs and wants, likes, all that, they're all different. Good afternoon. Beautiful South. You keep it all in on RT Radio 1. We will never know what it's like to be a dog. Thomas Nagel, the famous philosopher, asked the question what it's like to be a bat. His conclusion was that a bat's brain is so different that it's impossible to ever know. But we can't even imagine what it's like to be somebody else. Never mind a different species. Come on. I travel alone all the time. I go to theatre, movies, etc. on my own. I'm a 68-year-old woman. What's the big deal? I travel and socialise with friends and family and others also. I'm not married, widowed or divorced. I have a son and 2 grandchildren. I hate all the stereotyping. It's that person. We need to rethink how we treat all animals. I've no doubt that if we could scan all brains, most would be found to be sentient to a far greater level than we attribute to them, says Dee. And I would recommend the travel department for the ladies who wish to travel as part of a group. I have been on many trips over the years with a mixture of couples and single people. Brilliant, says that person. Just on something completely different. Neil was watching a programme on Netflix over the weekend, as we all were. It's called Attack of the Hollywood Clichés. Attack of the Hollywood Clichés with Rob Lowe. And he spotted a thing called the Wilhelm Scream. I'll play it for you here. This is the Wilhelm Scream. Right. You might recognise that because it's a stock sound effect and it has been used in a number of films and TV series. The first time it was used was in a movie called Distant Drums in 1951. It's usually used when someone is shot or falls from a great height. From a distance, obviously, you'd hear it. The sound is named after Private Wilhelm, a character in The Charge at the Feather River. That was a 1953 Western, so they used it again in that movie. It was one of those things that you know, you have a library of sound effects, and it was put together by an actor called Sheb Woolley. He voiced it. He's the screamer. But now it's becoming sort of an insider joke. So you'll hear it again now that I've brought your attention to it, the Wilhelm Scream. And you can really annoy the person you're watching a movie with by going, "Do you hear that? That's the Wilhelm Scream." Indiana Jones featured it. Toy Story, Cars, Up, Monsters University, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Kung Fu Panda, Game of Thrones, all featured the Wilhelm Scream. Ah! Quick commercial break. Oh, the computer says no. That deserves a scream in itself. Here you go.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, this is go.ie is an online personalised resource for women and their loved ones who have been impacted by gynaecological cancer. The site is part of the Irish Cancer Society's Women's Health Initiative, the aim of which is to improve health and well-being for women impacted by cancer who are dealing with the side effects and consequences of treatment. The site has been up and running now for almost a month, and two of the people involved in its creation are with me in studio, Professor Donal Brennan, Professor of Gynecological Oncology at UCD. How are you doing, Donal? Thanks for coming in. And Yvonne O'Mara, Women's Cancer Survivorship Research Coordinator, Social Worker and Psychotherapist. How are you, Yvonne? I'll go to you first, Yvonne, to tell us how it all came about.
Thanks, Ray, and good afternoon to all your listeners. So the idea isn't a particularly difficult one, but it's one that wasn't in situ this time last year. Knowing and having worked with patients for a number of years, anyone in healthcare will know that patients Google all the time. And unfortunately, they go down avenues and end up in inaccurate information sites. They end up in South America. They end up in the Americas. They end up in the Southern Hemisphere on websites that we don't know are accurate. And this is Go platform is information that is accurate and pertinent to an Irish audience led by Irish women. And I think that's what makes it so unique.
Okay. And before you put it together, you asked the people who would use a site like this, what did they want from a site?
Yes, an opportunity arose within the Women's Health Initiative early on in its foundations this time last year, whether we would go down paper or whether we would go online. And for the reasons that I've just mentioned, we know that most people Google and search. And so what we did is we put a call out to the Irish Society of Gynaecological Oncology's Patient and Public Involvement Group, asking women who've been impacted by cervical cancer to form a group, of which the team and I would have led many workshops around whether this was a concept or an idea that would be helpful. Did the women think it would be helpful? And if it was helpful, what would be the type of information that should go in it? And that's we've just taken it from there.
Okay. And Donal, you have these conversations every day, or definitely every week, so they're routine to you. But for the person who's coming into you, this is turning their world upside down, isn't it?
Absolutely, Ray. And I think that sometimes when you've been in clinical medicine for a while, you maybe become a little bit immune to that idea. And what we take as routine is obviously a very special, a very important day for the women who are coming into us. Remember, when a lady is diagnosed with cervical cancer, she may well have been given that diagnosis a few weeks prior to actually coming to see us in the cancer centre. And there is a lag period where scans have to be done, these famous MDT meetings have to happen. And there is that period where people will, without doubt, look for more information. And one of the kind of eye-opening things about this was the simple things that patients told us that we could do that we hadn't thought of ourselves. And one of the kind of clear and most, I suppose, important parts of the website that I think are, you know, the list of questions that patients would ask if they had a second chance to go through the process, and the list of questions that they didn't ask that they felt they should have asked. And the other thing that I think is quite interesting is they asked us to explain why we ask the questions we ask.
Okay.
Because sometimes people can be asked quite serious questions during these consultations, and they may be sometimes upsetting, and they may not understand why we're asking those questions. They're the sort of insights the patients give you that you wouldn't ever get unless you actually bring them into the forum at the start.
So what sort of questions do they want to ask?
Well, a lot of the time they're very simple questions, because ultimately we only take in a very small amount of any interaction we have with professionals. So when you go into a doctor...
That's interesting in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, like, you know, even if the consultation goes on for half an hour, I'm sure most people will only take in 10 or 15% of what's actually been said. They want very simple things. Where has my cancer come from? What is the histological diagnosis? What grade is it? What stage is it? And oftentimes, they actually don't bring those questions back to their loved ones, or those answers back to their loved ones. Because what happens is these people are under a lot of pressure, because they've built up this consultation to come to the cancer centre. And they have lots of brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, grannies ringing them up saying, well, what did the doctor say? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the patient doesn't remember, because they've been given so much information. They've actually been given too much information in that period of time. So we found that really insightful. And Yvonne will talk to you about some of the simple things that the patients advised to us about how that we would improve that communication.
Thanks, Donal. Yeah, so what we found is in one of the first workshops, one of the PPI relayed to us that...
PPI?
Sorry, yeah. My apologies. Yeah. Patient and public involvement.
Yeah, so just...
yeah, no, absolutely.
And is it even acronyms, I think?
No, absolutely. And I can't believe I said that.
Ordinary so I apologise. Yes.
Yeah, because I am you, yeah, so yeah. I apologise. Yes, so women that were impacted by cervical cancer, and also we looked outside women that were impacted by cervical cancer. We took a broad spectrum and we held a very large online closed group getting more information as to what these women would need, so breast cancer. But what we found in one of the groups that we facilitated was that one of the women, she actually had received a drawing from the surgeon, the gynaecologist, who was going to be performing the surgery, and this lady had cervical cancer, and she got the opportunity to take this drawing home. Right. And what we found is that those surgeons that can draw, and there are many who are excellent, they draw, but the drawing
explain,
is left.
To explain,
yes,
to explain.
But yeah, it's left on the chart. Uh-huh. And so what we came up with was what you have in front of you there is that now all women in the UCD sites for now are going to get a copy of this diagram to take home with them, explaining exactly where the cancer is, and also a visual aid, because not all of us are into writing and reading. So,
and those things that Donal mentioned, they get a card with that listed out on it as
yes,
well. Yes,
so that's in front of you there. Okay. So all the stage, the grade, and hopefully this is something, this is a project courtesy of the Irish Cancer Society. This is something that I hope that will not be just accessible to women in Dublin.
Donal, you've been a man. Well, that's, I don't know how to frame the question, but you know what the question is. Is it more difficult for a woman to sit in front of a man and talk about these things?
And I think that brings in, there's a couple of very important things around that, Ray. There's no doubt that women find it more difficult to speak to male consultants about certain personal issues. And that's why we are so lucky within Gynae Cancers to have this amazing group of clinical nurse specialists who are really our right-hand people who sit beside us and, you know, will really become very intimately involved with the patient journey, sometimes much more so than the consultant. And we couldn't do our job without those amazing women in general. But there's also... It maybe brings up another narrative that we don't talk about enough in Ireland, that once your cancer is treated, that you need to get on with your life.
Yes.
And whether you're a man or a woman, people find it difficult to actually complain about the fact that they might have long-term side effects of cancer treatment, because in some way they should be thankful that their cancer is no longer there. And this is where really This Is Go is important, because there are thousands of women living well after cervical cancer, but a huge proportion of them have very significant long-term side effects, and the services and supports around those are very poor.
Okay.
And also...
And probably one of the main ones for a lot of people is sex.
Sexual dysfunction, yes. Menopause, bowel dysfunction, body image issues.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of this came from, you know, patients, not just cervical cancer patients, breast cancer patients, ovarian cancer patients, all coming back with the same themes that they find it very difficult to actually discuss these matters with anybody, even with their partner.
And interesting statistics, and I'm sort of reluctant to talk about statistics, but when people come in, they're unlikely to bring up what happens afterwards with their sex life.
Yes, Ray. So what we know is that unless it's instigated by a physician, the topic of sexual dysfunction, and we know, and again, back to statistics, but over 90% of women will suffer from a chronic sexual dysfunction post-gynecological cancer, an acute, and then over 50% will go on to have a chronic dysfunction. It can range from vaginal dryness to the more complex, to painful sex or not having sex at all. And there can be massive unspoken changes within the relationship that often don't get unearthed or never spoken about because people are too shy.
So is there no counselling after it?
It's a great question. There is lots of counselling that is available, but psychosexual counselling is quite an area of expertise and not many counsellors are...
I wonder why in this country. I wonder why that's the case.
Yeah, but the service directory actually directs people to counsellors who are able to address these issues. Okay. And so again, under This Is Go, we talk about it. There's solutions. Lack of desire is a very simple one, but if you've lack of desire in your relationship is going to take its toll, and how you had sex in your 20s isn't how you have sex in your 40s. And if you've had a pre-existing sexual issue prior to a cancer, cancer's not going to improve it.
No.
So what we know is that all cancers leave their mark, but for some of them, they're visible, and others, they're invisible. And often psychosexual wellness is an invisible mark that often doesn't get spoken about.
Okay. So, Donal, cervical cancer has been talked about an awful lot in this country over the last, is it 3 years now? It's 3 years, isn't it? 2 or 3 years, for all the wrong reasons. But the other thing that's sort of parallel with that is that the world has got smaller. The medical world has got smaller. So, as you, one of you alluded to earlier on, in that gap between the not knowing and the knowing, you Google. And you find yourself in Mexico or South America and somebody offering a treatment that's revolutionary and miraculous and all that sort of thing. And you think, you know, far away hills are green. And that's happening. And we all know of people who've raised funds and gone to Mexico or America or whatever for a treatment that may not stand up to scientific rigor.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a multifaceted issue. You know, I did a primetime investigates program on this a couple of years ago, highlighting those exact issues. There's no doubt that misinformation is a huge problem in this age of 24-hour news cycle. And unfortunately, as we all know, there aren't a lot of miracle cures around, but it's very easy to sell these when you're not held to any significant standards. And that is always our worry. I feel that this is GO will allow us to really empower women to make those decisions in a much more, in a safe environment. And this is GO is really this, what we would call an online safe place for accurate, reliable information. And that, you might think, is a very simple point, but it's actually the key to the whole thing. Because the other thing that we kind of forget about is that there's a stigma attached to cervical cancer in particular, that in some way, whether you like it or not, women feel that they have in some way contributed to them getting cervical cancer because they have because of the link with HPV, and they experience that, as Yvonne says, in both very visible ways but also in invisible ways. So they often find it very difficult to talk within their communities about their. They feel very lonely. They feel desperate, and as a result, they're kind of pushed into these areas that maybe are very dangerous in some situations, as you said. Ultimately, you know, if we can empower people with knowledge, particularly women with knowledge, they'll make more informed decisions. Mm. And that's what this is really about.
Of course, these companies or clinics or whatever they call themselves in other countries are preying on very vulnerable women who are just looking for some sort of hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's always much more difficult to offer hope than reality. And, you know, sitting down, spending half an hour, 45 minutes with a family explaining that, you know, we are running out of treatment options here is a much more difficult conversation to have than to sit down and say, well, let's try something else new. And we do that on a weekly basis, Ray. There are families decimated by cervical cancer. I suppose on the other side, there's good news in that there's vaccination, the screening program and things like that. You know, we have an opportunity, and particularly in the developed world, to eradicate cervical cancer. But remember, there are still 500,000 new cases worldwide, 250,000 deaths, most of them in lower middle income class countries, which, you know, are ravaging families and societies. Ultimately, you know, if we can develop these sort of empowered women to speak out, because if we hadn't had these forums where these women felt safe to tell us what it was like, we wouldn't have this as GO.
Okay. We've talked about maybe the charlatans and the quacks, but let's be honest, we're a small country, so resources are tight. So when it comes to cutting-edge treatment, stuff that's been tried and tested, we don't have it available to us here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people look abroad and they go onto a website and of a reputable, you know, clinic, and they see that there's something else out there.
And I think that really what that's about is clinical trials, because ultimately the Irish infrastructure and clinical trials has been, you know, because of our size, it's been difficult to allow us to open these cutting edge clinical trials. Interestingly, only 2 weeks ago, the famous pembrolizumab was officially endorsed what we would now consider first line treatment.
Why did it take so long?
Because
Vicky Phelan have to go and fight for it?
Because
and then the people had to go on prime time and fight for it.
But ultimately, we're one of the only countries that has pembrolizumab available to us at the moment, because it is literally the trial has only been published because you have to do these studies.
Okay.
So the last big study was only published in September to prove that it was better than
So it was being used for other types of cancer, exactly, but wasn't available for cervical
cancer.
And
there are plenty of examples. For example, I work in ovarian cancer where pembrolizumab has failed utterly to show any survival benefit.
Okay.
So you have to be a little bit careful.
Okay, fair enough.
Coming back to Vicky Phelan's story, and Vicky Phelan's a very important person in all this, and to be honest with you, you know, Vicky and all the other ladies involved in the 221 Plus group, they were the reason that we were able to leverage the Irish Cancer Society to talk about not cervical cancer diagnosis, but surviving and living with cervical cancer after the treatment. Vicky is a good example of somebody who had to go away to get on the clinical trial. And ultimately, thanks to her work, and she has put some of her own money into this, we are now opening more and more clinical trials in Ireland, particularly in cervical cancer. We need to open more, but they're very difficult to open. And then there's lots of logistical issues. But then what happens is they're so sought after that they close quite quickly again.
Yes,
and being a small country, it can be difficult to convince the people who run these trials to open them here because they need the numbers in.
Yeah, but surely the history of how we've treated women with cervical cancer might be a sort of give you some leverage.
Yes, and you know, and to be fair, my colleague Dr. Derva Collins in Cork is about to open 3 or 4 new cervical cancer trials as part of the European network. So we are moving there. There's a big trial which is just open, combining pembrolizumab with radiotherapy in Cork. We're hoping to open one in Dublin, the same in Dublin. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We need more access to clinical trials for people who fail what we would call first-line therapy.
Just while I have you, just on a big picture thing about the future and cancer treatment, are we moving forward quickly or slowly?
I think there's two things about cancer that we need to be careful about. The first is that we've made huge steps forward about understanding the biology of cancer, and we've spent a lot of money on this worldwide. When we figure out what happens in the lab, it hasn't always translated into what happens in the clinic. But I think the best example I have about cancer is to switch into a different field and think of HIV, where we've turned HIV into a chronic illness. So you remember in the 80s, people dying all over the place.
It
was a killer. And now there are people living all over the world with HIV.
One pill a day.
And what we've learned is we need to turn cancer into a chronic disease. There are lots of people who present with advanced stage cancer, particularly breast cancer now and ovarian cancer, who will live much, much longer with their disease than they would have 10 years ago or 15 years ago. But they will always have cancer, Ray. And that's why we need to get away from this great Irish phenomenon called the all clear.
Yes.
And most of them will be on treatment, but they will live much longer lives. So, yes, we're making slow, incremental progress. We still have a long way to go. We need to improve our diagnostics. We're going to run into a big problem post-COVID with a lot of advanced stage presentations because people will have missed out on diagnostics or were almost afraid to come to the doctor. So I think we're in for a tough couple of years because of what's happened with COVID.
And we all know that if you get it early, better chances of good results.
So yeah, and that's why this is GO is important, because it's not just for people who have cancer. There's a whole section about
symptoms
yeah. and about, you know, if you're worried but don't have it. And the other part that's in it that's important is there's a whole section for partners, because one of the things that we didn't come into about sexual dysfunction is there's no point in talking to one person in a relationship about sexual dysfunction unless you talk to the two people in the relationship. Mm. You're probably not going to address sexual dysfunction.
Now, it's specifically about cervical cancer now, Yvonne, but it's going to expand over the coming years. Is that correct?
That's the vision.
Yeah.
So the next project is going to address ovarian cancer. And there's obviously 5 gynecological oncology cancers, but this is a springboard for all cancers, Ray. I hope that somebody will take this on and go, let's run with this, because not only for cancers, but for the likes of M&D, it's a motor neurons.
Yes.
It's applicable to so many that people can go to a safe one-stop shop, information that's accurate, decoding the science that's out there, finding clinical pathways, talking to children about cancer, talking to children about illness in general. It's not rocket science, but it's a lovely umbrella over it. And that's
interesting you brought that up, because one of the most important things for people who are diagnosed is, how do I tell my children?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting that was sort of up there in the top 2 things?
I'm so passionate about that. I have little people in my world. Ray, cancer has come into our world. Illness for the vast majority of families will come in at some stage. And what we know is that for the vast majority of individuals who are diagnosed with the cancer, there is a little person in their world. So whether it's a grandmother, that they've grandchildren or not, and often they get unspoken about. There's really, really excellent information on this in This Is GO and books to support children. And also, you've a social worker in most centres of excellence around the country that will help and guide you around this as well. And I might just say, Ray, that this This Is Go has been a community. I have been blown away by the selflessness of healthcare professionals working during a pandemic, during the cyber attack, that have given their time and energy for no money to populate and help for the greater good of people. I cannot express my thanks
We say thanks to them. Thisisgo.ie, thisisgo.ie. Professor Donal Brennan, thank you. And Yvonne Amara, thank you very much. Thank you.
Pleasure.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins us as he does every Monday. Good afternoon, Conor.
Hiya, Ray. How are you getting on?
Good. Pricewatch at RTE.ie for all your consumer issues if you want Conor to grapple with them. I'll tell you what, we'll just take a quick look forward to tomorrow first before we get to our problem. Tomorrow is Budget Day. How will it affect people?
Right.
How will it affect people and their pockets?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't expect a huge amount of largesse on the part of the government. I mean, we have been told that there'll be taxation measures worth around 500 million euros, and then there'll be spending of around 1 billion euro. Now, that seems like a lot of money, but even Micheál Martin has warned, to use the largesse or the language of the Late Late Show, there won't be something for everyone in the audience. So, you know, whatever we get, it'll be modest, but I suppose given the climate we're in, modest gains are better than, you know, significant tax hikes or whatever we might have been expecting in other circumstances.
So what about the traditional ones, cigarettes, alcohol?
Yeah, cigarettes are likely to go up by 50 cent, as they do every single year. Like, there has been no surprise on that score for years. The old reliables have really become the old reliable because, you know, alcohol wasn't touched last year. It probably won't be touched this year. So, you know, then you're looking at what impact fuel will be hit. Now, one of the things that's going to be happening this year, as opposed, you know, that'll be relatively new, is there will be increases in the carbon tax. Now, that's likely to see a 60-litre tank of diesel increasing by 150 or roughly from tomorrow or from Tuesday, from Wednesday. A similar tank of petrol is likely to go up by about 130. All of the fuels will go up from the summertime of next year because they don't be seen to be already adding to the already problematic energy prices that people are having to deal with. So you're going to see price increases on that score, and then it'll be then a question of what people are getting back. So, I mean, one of the things that have been talked about is free GP care for children up to the age of 7. So that might be something new. The drug refund scheme might fall from, I think it's 114 euros to 100 euros a month. That could save somebody who's on the drug refund scheme as much as 160, 170 euros a year. The dental scheme will be improved. An interesting one for a lot of your listeners will be, there will be greater tax incentives for people who are working from home. Because at the moment, you know, there is very, very poor tax incentives or tax reliefs for people working from home, despite the fact that there's a huge amount of people working from home, and despite the fact that the Taoiseach has talked about this blended working environment. So that might see people getting, you know, 30% off their utility costs for every day they're working at home.
Wow.
Which, if you're working from home 5 days a week, now that's not written in stone, it's just it's one of those things that has been mooted. So if you're working from home 5 days a week, you could see your utility bills fall by 30%, which could amount to like 300 quid over the course of a year. So it wouldn't be something to be sniffed at.
Is it 30% off your utility bill, or you've a tax?
No, it's 30%. You might get a tax credit, or you might actually, yeah. But it amounts to 30, it would amount to something like 30% off for each day that you're working from home.
Right,
so if you're working from home 3 days, now 3 days a week, you might get, you know, it might be worth 120 quid, 140 quid or whatever it might be. But, you know, as I say, you know, and it also doesn't look like there'll be any move on the much talked about public holiday or bonuses for frontline healthcare workers in the budget. That might be pushed further down the tracks.
Okay. That's tomorrow, and we may talk to you when we're on at 3:30.
I've given you all the info now, Ray.
Yeah, I know. This is what happens, isn't it? You talk about what's going to happen, then it happens. You talk about it as it happens, and then you talk about it after it happens, and everything's the same. Really.
You're old enough now, Ray, like I am, to remember that there was a time when the budget was a closely guarded secret, and nobody knew what it was going to contain. And there'd be these gasps. I remember driving with my dad, and there'd be these gasps and shock and outrage as various things were introduced. But sure, nowadays they leak it all, so everybody knows exactly what's happening.
You can understand why, because when they talked about introducing a tax on children's shoes, if they'd sort of said that beforehand, they would have heard the gasps.
Oh my God, what are you nuts?
Yeah. So they've learned their lessons over the years.
Listeners.
Okay. So this came in the pricewatch at RTE.ie. Dear Connor, I'm selling a baby buggy, or at least trying to. I'd posted it an ad on Facebook, and after weeks, I got a WhatsApp message from someone saying they wanted to buy it. I was delighted. They said they would send a courier to get it and mailed me a link to a payment site. I followed the link and was told the site had received payment for the courier directly from the purchaser, and that if I entered my credit card details, red flag, I'd get the balance of the funds. I entered my details as requested, and minutes later I got a message from my bank asking if I had authorised a payment of €1,000, which I hadn't done. I called my bank and said I was being scammed. Have you heard of this one? You're the scam police. You're the scam police now. We have to get you a uniform.
Absolutely. First off, kudos to the bank, because that's exactly what you want your bank to do. If there's any kind of suspicious transaction, you want them to be sending you a text message immediately so that they can stop it. Now, this is one of those more sinister scams, because a lot of the scams that we talk about, Ray, as you know, are just ones that are blanket scams, that they send out 20,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 scam messages to loads of people and they hope a couple of them land. This is a much more intricate one, because it involves scam artists actually going through Facebook Marketplace, looking for at the stuff that people have for sale, contacting them, launching into this ruse about couriers, about payments and all of that stuff, and then trying to extract money from people. So this is just one element of that. Another thing that sometimes happens with these Facebook Marketplace scams is that the person will say, listen, I want to buy the drum kit that you're selling. So if you pay for the courier costs, I'll have it delivered to my house or whatever it might be. And in every instance, what they're trying to do is they're trying to extract your financial details from you, and then they use those financial details to try and to take the money from your account. But they're playing on your goodwill for a start, and they're also playing on your hope and optimism that you finally sold a product that you want to sell. So it's not just the same kind of social engineering or phishing scams that we've talked about in the past. This is actually people trawling the websites, and it doesn't have to be Facebook Marketplace or whatever. It can be any kind of
eBay, Gumtree,
service,
whatever,
eBay, Gumtree, Dundeal, adverts, whatever it might be. Yeah. And they actually target individuals. They make contact with them, and they try and they do all of their usual tricks that scam artists do. They emphasise that there's a need for speed. They emphasise that, you know, this is an advantageous move for the person who's selling the product. And similarly, by the way, there's an awful lot of scam artists out there who will be selling products on these websites that don't actually exist. And the whole purpose of all of these things is to get your money. So there's a couple, like, just people just need to be acutely aware that the scam artists aren't just based overseas and flooding the internet with the stuff.
That's my next question, because I have, you know, an image of them in an office somewhere in St. Petersburg, or, you know, in Seoul or someplace like that. But are these people then, are they just down the road in an industrial estate or in a bed sit or in
they
an
can
office,
be.
There's office.
But,
all right.
You know, they can be, but also the nature of the internet means they could be in a warehouse in St. Petersburg or Latvia or London or Australia or wherever it might be. All they need to do is if there was a kind of a criminal enterprise, they'd say, okay, you three guys, I want you three guys to look at the classified advert sites in Ireland, make contact with people, particularly make contact with people who are selling a product and have been selling a product for a number of weeks. Because inevitably, if you're selling something for a number of weeks, you become more desperate. You want to sell the product. So anytime you get a bite on your fishing line or whatever it might be, you think, oh, brilliant, I've got somebody here. And people will, like, it's in our nature, in many cases, to be good and to trust other people. And this is just one of those depressing times when I have to remind all your listeners, trust no one. It doesn't matter if Ray Darcy emails you out of the blue.
You might give me advice.
Well,
it could happen, you know, because I've spotted something, right? It's a second-hand thing that, and it's still there. It's been there for a number of weeks now. And I said this to Jenny, and she said, no way you're going to get involved in that sort of a transaction. Then I said it to Niamh.
Well, not after your track record, Ray.
Yeah, I know. Between the shoes from Japan and the one digit away from giving away my bank details. Yeah, I don't have a good record, you're right.
Did you not buy a tiny little screw at one point?
I did, yeah. So Niamh, who's producing the show today, said, well, if you're going to do it, arrange a cash deal in an arranged car park somewhere. That's a great dodge. But
Niamh isn't a million miles away from the truth there. The really important thing is that you establish a personal connection with the person. So you're not just dealing with them remotely.
Yes.
Now, so that might mean you might say to them, send me your number. I give you a ring. And then you talk to the person, and you get a lot of insight. You can tell
you get a sense
a lot
of them,
from a conversation.
Yes,
so you can tell if a person is legit or not.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, if the guy is based in some warehouse in North Korea or St. Petersburg or Australia, you know that straight away from talking to you.
Yeah.
So you establish that contact. If you're selling goods, you do the old-fashioned thing. You bring the buggy to a public place. Now, I'm not saying it's some dodgy laneway in the dead of night, but to a public place, you arrange for them to give you the cash when you give them the buggy.
Yeah.
So it's a terrible thing that we have to kind of reduce
the world we live in.
It's
going to get worse and worse.
It is the world that we live in.
Isn't it? It's going to get worse and worse. But
the bottom line here is, and the reason why this is so important, is that you have to be aware on every level that you can be a target.
Yeah.
So if you're hoping to have any kind of transaction online, and that doesn't matter if you're the seller of something or if you're the potential buyer of something, you got to do your homework and you got to make sure that you're not being scammed, because the criminals are out there and they want to exploit people's generosity, their good nature and their vulnerability. So it's not just the blanket hello, you know, we're UPS and we try to deliver a product, click this link thing.
Yeah.
And it's also not, like in this instance, the person was asked to click a link. And as you said straight away, well, that's a red flag right away.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time they don't even do that. They will say, you know, we're sending a courier around to pick up the product and then we're going to send the money to you. And then what happens is the courier arrives first. You haven't got the money, but you're like, oh, look, they've sent the courier, kosher.
Yeah.
So you give them the product and then the money never arrives. And they're not, you're not talking about massive scams, amounts of money here.
And
the
they may
time.
Have, your bank, they may have your bank details as well on top
they
of the
Well, that's always the worst case scenario. They might have your bank details, they might have that. But also, you know, you don't want to get involved in that kind of stuff. So always establish a human contact before you do any dealings with them. Arrange to meet them face to face in a public place.
Yeah.
In broad daylight, and where you're completely safe. And if you want them to give you the money, hand over the money, well, that's what they do. That's what happens then.
I was just thinking about banks there and all the ones that were shut. You know, anyway, the fact, you know, face to face, all those things. Anyway, Conor, thank you so much. Pricewatch at rte.ie if you want Conor
to talk
to you with any
soon,
of the consumer
Ray.
Issues.
Mind
Thanks,
yourself.
Conor. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Nish Toshinam, Reprieve Skelton, and Nogtala, Barbarly Kushtala. Gurmagat, Barbara, thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. The name of the cancer website, thisisgo.ie. Thisisgo.ie. And sentient animals. My cat Bogart is very smart. He knows when I plug my radio off in the morning, he comes down the corridor to greet me. He jumps on my bed, meows till I get out to feed him, then meows again to let him out to do his business. That's Jane in Wexford, who has a sentient cat called Bogart, or even Bogart. And on loneliness and travelling alone, I'm a 63-year-old separated woman with 3 grown-up children. I can safely say I've never been this happy before. I can leave the house on a Monday and don't have to come back for a day or a week or a month. It is great freedom not to have to answer to anyone. And Kieran says, the talk about loneliness and solo travel is really hitting home. Love travelling, but find dinner alone gets difficult very quickly. We spoke about that with Margaret on Friday. And this one comes in from another Mary. Just listened to your show about the slot on Friday about living on your own and can't completely identify with Margaret. I think as you get older, you realise how isolated you can become. And in turn, this can lead to loneliness. I still work full time. I'm 64. I have 2 daughters and 3 grandchildren nearby. But they do have their own busy lives to lead, and quite rightly so. I don't want to be a burden. My sons live abroad and only every few years do we actually see each other. I woke up one morning to find that all 4 children had fled the nest more or less at the same time. As I heard a long time ago, our children are loaned to us and we have to let them go. The knowledge that they are all happy and responsible, caring adults means that maybe I did something right. I divorced many years ago, but fine now, and I do wonder if COVID has been a catalyst that we are more isolated due to the way we live our lives. When I think back to my childhood, neighbours would be out in their front gardens and would have a chat. Now it appears front gardens are concreted over and more like car showrooms with no opportunity to have a chat over the fence. Neighbours know who lived in their streets, not so nowadays. I would like to be put in touch with Margaret, even though I live in the UK, as it would be great to chat to her. Even if it is a meet-up over Zoom of a group with a get-together in person, as and when it happens, what a difference it could make. Keep the conversation going. Just knowing that there are more people feeling like you helps minimise the feeling of loneliness. I have a lovely friend of 89 years. She's very sprightly and lives in her house and does her garden, still drives as takes her advanced driving test, but she is so lonely with the added distress at times of having outlived all her friends. She doesn't want to go into a home or warden care assisted living, and I fully understand, but is the loneliness she experiences worth it? Independence is great and I'm all for that, but not when it outweighs the cost. I hope you find time to read there's that on being mortal. I told Gawande, and I've mentioned that a number of times over the years. He's an American philosopher, is he? But he's written about, obviously, our mortality, the fact that we're going to die, but he also writes about old age. And I reckon we're probably 20, 30 years behind America, and they're doing things now, you know, with villages and independent living and all sorts of things that we are not near doing. And we need to have a chat as a country about, because we're all going to be old. We're all going to be old, and people listening now are old, and we're all going to have to decide what we want to do as we get to a stage in our lives where we're not independent anymore. And the government are going to have to decide what's to be done. We're hearing a lot at the moment about pensions and the fact that in a few years' time, 2050, that there'll be more people depending on pensions than are working to pay the taxes to fund the pensions. But that has implications for care as well. And we're all living longer because of medical advances. And we definitely do have to have that chat as a country, Mary. And we'll continue talking about it here. But not right now, because we have to do our quiz of today. So today is the 11th of October. 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. On the way, and a prize. And what is the prize? Yes. Where did I put that? It's under that email. There we go. It's the Kingsley Hotel, isn't it? I'll get to it at the end. I'll give it a mention. On the line now, we have Michael. How are you doing, Michael?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I lost the details of the prize, but it's the Kingsley Hotel there. Yeah.
I believe so.
KingsleyHotel.ie. It sounds amazing. Beautiful bedrooms they have, Michael, and a bistro-style restaurant, luxury spa, extensive health club, and it's there on the River Lee, ideal base to explore Cork City and County. So you can go west, you can go east, you can go wherever you want to go. The Kingsley.ie. Now, Michael, what are you up to today?
I'm just finished work, Ray, and I'm just in the door.
You are a school teacher?
I am indeed, primary school teacher, Ray.
Right, what class?
I am actually a supply teacher, so I go from school to school. It's a new position that's been created whereby school, they have an app and schools book me. So I had fifth and sixth class today.
Hold on. So somebody rings in sick and then they have an app and they get Michael Joyce to hop into his car and come at short notice.
Yeah, well, I'm employed by a base school and we're the hub school for about 11 schools. So you will be pre-booked on this app in advance, usually, or the odd day where there's nothing on, somebody may ring in sick, and you'll travel to that school.
So today, for example, will you be there in the same place tomorrow?
No, I'm in a different place tomorrow.
Okay. How is that, Michael? Have you done the normal teaching before?
No, I'm at the tender years that I am, Ray, I'm a newly qualified teacher.
Oh, are you? Right.
Yeah. I was in finance for years.
And why did you change?
I decided to get out of finance. I was pursuing another avenue, and I kind of fell into teaching, and I really love it, and I've grown passionate about it.
Right. And it wasn't something that you know, when you were asked as a 12-year-old, what do you want to be when you grow up, you would have said a teacher, no.
No, footballer, sure, Ray.
I want to be Roy Keane.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's very interesting. And do you mind me asking how you sort of happened into it?
I went off to do a master's in IT just to move away from the finance. And a friend of mine, I obviously had an undergrad. A friend of mine asked, they were stuck for subs because obviously there's a sub shortage in the country. Would I cover a class? I went in, ended up there for a week, and loved it. Dropped out of the master's I was doing, and I went off to do a master's in education, primary education.
And what age are you?
I'm 46.
That's great. It's never too late.
Never too late, Ray. Never too late. Sorry, go ahead.
This is a silly question, but are you happier now than ever?
Absolutely, yes.
Are you? Right, okay, right.
Yeah.
And you've two daughters, 7 and 8.
And that's correct, yes, even
and,
Sophie.
And are they aware of Daddy's change in career?
Well,
they're too young.
Yes, certainly. No, no, very, very aware of it, certainly when it comes to homeschooling.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's yeah. Great. So what's the name of the app? Just so I know. Remember,
oh, no, it's with the Department
of
Education.
Oh, it's with the Department. Okay,
so it's,
right.
It's through the Department.
Right, okay.
Created lately.
I was jesting. Okay, you're up against Georgia Hearn in Wexford. How are you doing, Georgia?
Hi there.
You are a student of what?
Nursing.
Aha. Whereabouts?
In WIT.
And why ain't you at school today?
I'm off lectures today.
Right, okay. What year are you in?
Second.
Right, and it's a 4-year course?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and did you always want to be a nurse?
Hopefully, I always wanted to be a midwife. So.
Right, that's what you're aiming for?
Yeah, hopefully.
And at what stage then of the 4 years do you have to specialise in an area like midwifery?
This is different. I kind of went into this to see what I want to do at the end of it,
right.
If you get me.
Yeah.
So I might change my mind still.
Okay. So you may leave nursing altogether, or you may choose a different area of nursing?
Oh, no, I'll definitely stay in nursing, maybe a different area.
Aha, right. Okay. And you don't have to decide quite yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
Another little while.
Right. So you got a new puppy a couple of weeks ago?
I did. His name is Harry.
Harry. Now, does Harry have a mind, do you think? That's our question of the day. Do dogs have minds?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. What sort of personality does Harry have?
Crazy.
Right. Okay, he has a crazy mind. Okay. So 5 questions each. Michael and Georgia, whoever answers most correct gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck. Here we go.
Good luck, Georgia.
You too.
Right, Michael, first question for you. On this day in 1911, the Wuchang Uprising occurred in China, which led to the fall of the Qing Dynasty, spelt with a Q, and the establishment of the Republic of China. What colour are the stars on the Chinese flag? Red or gold?
Gold, Ray.
Correct answer. Georgia, on this day in 1986, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev opened talks at a summit in Reykjavik in Iceland. What colours are on the cross? That is important. What colours are on the cross on the Icelandic flag? White and blue or white and red?
White and red.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Michael, audio question. Have a listen to this.
You guys are working hard for once.
Where's my sandwich?
Let's made us do it.
No, it was Frank.
It was Frank. I'm a patsy.
Why?
This is all my fault, Miss Lemon. Because I let it happen.
It was on this day in 2006, US sitcom 30 Rock, starring Alec Baldwin and Tracy Morgan, first premiered on NBC. Can you name the actress who both created and starred in that show?
Let's go.
No, the actress.
No.
The actress.
Oh, the actress. Sorry. No, Ray, I can't.
No, Tina Fey. Tina Fey.
Tina Fey.
Okay. Georgia, have a listen to this.
I can't win with you, Brenda. What the hell do you want from me? I mean, first of all, you cut me loose. You make this big production about how we ought to see other people. So I did. And now you're throwing it back in my face.
Look, I didn't think it would happen that fast.
The actor Luke Perry was born on this day in 1966. He starred as Dylan McKay in the very popular teen drama set in a postcode in California. Can you name the show?
Beverly Hills 90210.
That's correct, yes. Question number 3 for you, Michael. In the news today, we hear that a Canadian singer who held the number one spot for 11 weeks here with his hit Everything I Do is going to be playing dates in Dublin and Belfast next year. Can you name him?
Brian Adams.
Is the correct answer. And Georgia, for you, in the news today, we hear that there is to be a real-life, non-violent version of events taken from which very popular South Korean TV series, which is currently the most watched show on Netflix?
Oh, I was just looking at that Squid Game.
Yes. Have you watched it?
I haven't. I'm going to, though.
Oh, you're going to. Right, okay. Michael, you're on 2. George is on 3. It's a music question. Have a listen to this.
C'est toi, pour moi, moi, pour toi, dans la vie. Tu me l'as dit, pas juré, pour la vie.
That French singer, songwriter and actress died on this day in 1963. Can you name her?
Edith Piaf.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Georgia, music question for you. Have a listen.
Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling.
And on this day in 1938, that jazz musician married his longtime girlfriend, Alpha Smith. Can you name him?
Frank Sinatra?
No.
Armstrong.
Yeah, I had to take your first answer. Sorry. Louis Armstrong is the correct answer. Sorry about that. So, three plays three, which means it's down to the wire. Michael, get this right and you put Georgia under a bit of pressure. Good luck with this, your final question. On this day in 1982, the Mary Rose, flagship of King Henry VIII, was raised to the surface after 437 years at the bottom of the Solent. It now forms part of the Maritime Museum at which seaside city in the UK? Portsmouth or Southampton?
Portsmouth, right?
Is the correct answer. Yes, well done. Now, Georgia, that pressure I mentioned, you're now under it a little bit. You're on three, Michael's on four. So if you get this, we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck. A three-day hunt for the Loch Ness Monster ended on this day in 1987. The search cost $1.6 million, hoping to prove or disprove the legend of Nessie. It found no scientific proof except three sonar blips that showed objects in the middle of the 754-foot deep loch. What castle overlooks Loch Ness? Is it Braemar Castle or Urquhart Castle?
Sorry, Loch which?
Loch Ness. So which castle overlooks Loch Ness? Braemar Castle or Urquhart Castle?
I'll just go for the second one.
You go for the second one. It's the correct answer. The guesses count as well. Urquhart is correct. So it's four each. Brings us to a tie-break situation. We asked you this before. You went on air. Whoever answers closest to the correct answer gets the prize. I'll just read it for our listeners. As we gear up for budget tomorrow, how long would it take to cycle from Leinster House on Kildare Street in Dublin to our Galway studio via the N7? Answers in hours and minutes. Michael.
I said 6 hours, 20 minutes, Ray.
6 hours.
That's the ambition.
It's 214 kilometres, just for your information. Yeah. Georgia, yeah. Your guess?
I think it was 11 and a half.
You said 11 and a half hours. The correct answer is 10 hours and 45 minutes. So, Michael, you'll know from your teaching maths that
George, well done, Georgia.
Georgia is today's winner. Well done, Georgia. Listen, Michael, thanks so much. I enjoyed that chat. Good luck with your new career. And we'll send you out a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs.
That's great. Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Michael. Georgia, you're today's winner.
Fabulous.
That's lovely. So you and a person of your choice will be off to the Kingsley Hotel in Cork. You can use it as a base to explore the city or County Cork. Loads of things to do there. Thekingsley.ie for more information. Well done, Georgia.
Oh, I can't
Good
wait.
Good talking
Thank
to you.
You
Mind
so
yourself.
Much.
Bye, bye.
The Ray
bye.
Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There's a great documentary on RTE 1 tonight, which comes highly recommended from here. It's on after the news. It's called Barney Curley, The Man Who Beat the Bookies. All about the horse trainer who pulled off an extraordinary betting coup in 1975. And the man who made the film, made the documentary, is with us now, Ross Whittaker. How are you doing, Ross?
I'm doing great.
It's a little bit, it's tinged with a lot of sadness because Barney died in May of this year.
That's right, yeah. So I suppose it's a combination of telling his great story and a bit of a tribute to him as well at the same time.
Yeah. And you interviewed him 2 years ago, just coming up to 2 years ago. Yeah.
2019, you told me before, because I've lost track of all time at this stage. But yeah.
So you spent a bit of time in his company. What type of man was he? Where was he from?
Yeah, he's an amazing man. I actually only spent that one day with him, but he kind of blew me away. Just a man with a great aura, and you could tell just like a really interesting mind and that kind of stuff. And his backstory was he was from Northern Ireland, Fermanagh, born in 1939. Back then, Catholics in Northern Ireland had few opportunities. And eventually he sought out his own opportunities and ended up managing show bands, but eventually getting into horse racing, gambling and pulling off this very, very famous coup in 1975.
Yeah. So he went from working in Britain, studying to be a Jesuit priest, then the show bands, and then a career gambler.
Yeah.
And trainer as well. And
trainer, or horse owner. Oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah. I think he managed to combine all those things very well, because a lot of his bigger gambles that he won with were on his own horses.
Okay.
You know, so he kind of probably knew how to trick the bookies a little bit in terms of when he had a horse that he knew was probably better than people suspected.
Uh-huh.
And then he knew to make those bets, I suppose.
And that was the case. And he's done a number of coups, but the one you're concentrating on is from 1975, Bellewstown Racecourse, and the horse in question was Yellow Sam.
Yeah, Yellow Sam became a very famous horse because he was actually not a very good horse, but he was in a very bad race. Right. And Barney figured this out, or figured out that he'd had huge losses, I think, in the build-up to it, and he needed to have one last kind of go at it to see could he win everything back and more. And so he came up with this huge kind of plan, a huge feat of planning. He had 300 people around Ireland putting money on for him, but he had to make sure it kept it completely quiet from the bookies. He had this horse that no one expected to win. He had a jockey, that Michael Furlong, who managed to keep his mouth shut, even though he didn't really know what was going on. And the biggest thing was that he managed to stop the information getting to the race yes. course.
And that's why he chose Bellewstown.
Exactly, because Bellewstown had one phone line right. into the racecourse,
which was in a telephone box.
Yeah. It's like which was in a telephone box. And so, very quickly explain,
yes.
in those days, the starting price of the race, if that was 2-1 or 5-1 or whatever it was, that was the odds that everyone got. So if you put a bet on in a bookie far away, you got the odds that were in the race course.
Yeah, the starting price was dictated by the bookies on the race course.
Exactly. Yeah. So the key was to stop the information getting back to the race course that he was putting on actually quite small bets all around the country and kind of take them by surprise. And the way he did that was he got his friend Benny O'Hanlon to commandeer the phone box for 20 minutes before the race and stop anyone from getting into it. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do it in any kind of aggressive or violent way. He did it by pretending that he had a sick aunt in Drogheda Hospital not far away right. and that he was on the phone to find out how she was getting on.
So meanwhile, this army of 300 people around the country were putting small bets on Yellow Sam.
Yeah.
They were in a normal situation. Now they would be pushing down the odds, but because Benny was on the phone and none of this information was getting back to Bellewstown Racecourse, the odds remained at 20-1.
Exactly. So nobody at the racecourse had a clue. And so the horse romped home, completely surprised everyone, and they knew nothing of it until a little while after, when news started filtering back through that phone box that actually a huge number of bets had been put on around the country, and he ended up winning around £300,000, which is probably around £2 million now. And that sort of set his fortunes in a different direction.
And that was completely legal.
Completely legal, yeah, absolutely legal. And I suppose you wouldn't get away with it now with mobile, and it's a different system now. Can't get away with anything now. But even then, you know, like Barney would always say, like the bookies knew everything and they knew everyone, and they always could, if there was any whispers about anything, they'd know. So his thing was he'd been a manager of show bands, so he knew everyone in Ireland, and he knew enough people in Ireland that he could trust to keep quiet, that he could actually manage to do this, you know.
And he had it all planned. He even went to the Brogan's house beforehand, and he yeah. got the woman of the house to drive him to the racecourse because everybody knew his car.
Exactly, and because they thought if he didn't show up, then the horse wouldn't have a chance. Like, why? You know, if yes. the horse had a chance, then surely the owner would be there. But you know, if he didn't even bother to show up, then there's no chance this horse could be.
So he watched Yellow Sam win, knowing that he was yeah. going to win 300,000 from behind a bush.
A gorse bush in the middle of the track, yeah. And just through filming it, I've now stood in that gorse bush a few times myself, right, now, right. watching the horses go by. Right. It's quite a good view.
And that, it doesn't end there. He's such a fascinating man. So with his winnings from that, he bought a house, a mansion, I suppose. Would it be a very large house?
Kind of in Newmarket, he bought a whole kind of stables.
No, but before that, the house in Mullingar.
The house, oh yeah, sorry, yeah. yes. God, so much to it. The house in Mullingar, yeah, he bought a house in Mullingar, which it was actually in the programme, The Great House Revival, about a year and a half ago, which I was also involved in.
Right.
And so it's a massive, massive house. It's been a hotel since and so on. And after a couple of years living there, he decided he wanted to move to the UK, so he decided the best way to sell it was to raffle it off, and some people I'm sure will remember that story. And so he had a huge number of takers for the raffle, which is £200 a ticket, and he ended up taking home 1.8 million from the raffle
after buying it for a million.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and this is where it gets sort of poignant and nearly sort of circular, in that, you know, we mentioned that he was trained to be a Jesuit priest. Charlie, who was his son, who was the apple of his eye by all accounts, died tragically at the age of 18 in a road accident. And it made Barney reassess his life.
Yeah, well, he calls his son, he was my dream. Now, he has two daughters as well, Marie-Louise and Catherine, and they're all a very, very close family. But I think with Charlie was sort of burgeoning jockey and stuff like that, and they had a really strong connection in that regard. And then just tragically, at the age of 18 in 1995, he lost his life in a car accident, and Barney was at a huge low. And it was the visit of a priest to him that he tangentially knew, who convinced him to say, look, come on, come to Zambia with me. I want to show you what I'm doing over there. Barney went there, and it kind of just gave him a hugely new lease in life. And he ended up diverting, I suppose, the rest of it, his attention and his money towards charity for the following kind of 20 years, and raised millions for his charity, Direct Aid for Africa. And they built schools and hospitals and all sorts, and transformed the life of many people.
And that's on tonight after the news. And we leave the final words with Barney Curley and his thoughts on gambling.
It's impossible to make gambling pay. The bookmakers always win. And if you're winning, they'll not allow you to win. The only way to beat them is do something like Yellow Sam. The only chance you have. And then, zip, no more.
No more. There's the late Barney Curley there. Tonight after news on RT1. Ross Whittaker, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.